was almost the holy year of 1600, and great things had been happening in the Catholic Church. The Council of Trent had concluded, Catholic teaching was on an even course, the violence had abated, and even the King of France, once a Protestant, was returning to the Catholic faith. It was a truly auspicious beginning for the great holy year. The papacy hoped to take advantage of the ripe terrain and the 400,000 expected pilgrims looking for renewal and confirmation in their faith by using art as a means to teach, persuade, and delight. Hi, I'm Liz Lev, and I'm an art historian, and you're listening to the podcast From Tourists to Pilgrims. To speak to a vast public, many of whom were jaded after years of the slick artifice of the Mannerist painting, patrons were looking for a new approach to art that could cut through the fog of doubt and illuminate the hearts of the pilgrims. They found that approach in an unlikely artist, Michelangelo Merisi of Caravaggio. Born in Milan around 1571, Caravaggio lacked the training in fresco and drawing that Michelangelo and Raphael had. But he did excel at painting nature, and he manipulated oil paint to give the effect of immediacy. In the French National Church of St. Louis of the French, Caravaggio was given his big break in 1599. He was chosen to paint the stories of St. Matthew for the Jubilee year. The subject of Matthew, the wealthy tax collector who left behind riches to follow Christ in poverty and ultimately wrote one of the four Gospels before his death by martyrdom, had been portrayed many, many times before. But how could Caravaggio tell this ancient story in a new way that would inflame the hearts and minds of the 17th century pilgrims? In his rendition of The Calling of St. Matthew, Caravaggio played to his strengths. He used his still life skills to capture the attention of viewers by meticulously rendering the silk sleeves, the brocade vests, the velvet trim of the vestments of Matthew and his rich companions. The opulence of their clothing would resemble the luxury designer wear to the modern eye. The loose cash on the table, a startling display of disposable wealth, and the sword, a status symbol in the day, suggest a lifestyle that is the desire of many. On the right side of the painting, however, from the area closest to the altar, two men approach. They wear simple woolen robes and they are barefoot. Yet it is the tall standing man in his poor drapes who is the authority figure in the work. This man, Jesus, points towards the group, his curved finger reminiscent of Adam in Michelangelo's creation of man in the Sistine Chapel. Jesus tells Matthew, "Follow me." He is the figure in the center, a bearded man, an older man, who has spent his life to get that seat at the table and is now asked to give up everything he thought was important. He seems wedged in by the other men, as if it were impossible for him to exit this life in which he has become so deeply entrenched. But Caravaggio tells us that he will follow by unveiling a use of light that becomes like an actor in the scene, the beam of light that comes from the space of the altar behind the head of Christ hits Matthew full in the face. It's like a tractor beam ready to draw him, to extricate him from his present situation so that he may follow Christ. Thank you. Since Caravaggio was debuting this light for the very first time, he put a window into the scene to make it clear. We're not looking at natural light, but a supernatural light. We are looking at Matthew as he sees the light of Christ, and his life will be changed forever. This painting, of course, carries a profound meaning for priests who see in Matthew's calling a mirror of their own vocation. But Caravaggio's mandate was far greater. It was to preach conversion to all. In the eyes of a tourist, it might be easier to believe that Matthew's character is the man curled over the table on the far left-hand side. Placed closest to the viewer's space as they approach the chapel, he is entirely absorbed in the here and now of counting the money. Jesus appears to wait for him to complete what he's doing before he looks up and calls him. This figure might resemble the many tourists who enter into the church not looking for spiritual enlightenment, but merely a famous work of art to kill a few minutes before moving on to the next gelato. But the eyes of the pilgrim coming to this church are different. The pilgrim comes with his or her eyes raised, looking for something greater than this world. And the pilgrim's gaze is matched by that of Matthew, who has stopped looking at the money long enough to look up at just the right moment that Jesus is passing by. Looking closely at the feet of the two men, you see Peter is planted firmly, while Jesus' front foot is down and his back foot is raised. In a moment, Jesus will have already passed on, continuing his mission. The split-second moment of seeing the light is the quintessential element of the Baroque era that Caravaggio was heralding. The pilgrim comes to Rome waiting for that moment of recognition, that vision that will change his life forever. It is not an easy decision. The two boys on the right-hand side, whose faces are flooded with light, can easily follow Christ and move from one path and then join another. Matthew's decision will change everything he has been up till now and transform it into a new person. As he stands on the threshold of that decision, one hand points to himself, the other hand still holds a coin attached to the wealth and privilege he has earned. But Caravaggio's spectacular use of light revealed not only Matthew's decision, but points the direction for pilgrims who too are looking for an indication of the way.
You've been listening to From Tourist to Pilgrim, a podcast written and narrated by Liz Lev, produced by Johanna Bronkova and Mara Micheli.